Addiction devastates millions of Americans, and shaking off its grip is extremely hard. Earlier this year, Side Effects Public Media asked people in recovery to share their stories at a live event in Indianapolis. We'll share them in a series called Sober, Stories of Recovery and Hope. This story, from Dwight Fortune, shows that addiction reaches into all parts of society.
So I want to tell you a story about how a green folder is the key to my success in my recovery. Now, before I get into that part of the story, I got to give you a little bit of background about me, correct? Just so you know where I'm coming from. See, I thought my story was unusual because I didn't have that regular story that you may think you hear about an addict where they grew up with a troubled home, abusive parents, drugs and alcohol all around. That was not my story. My life was awesome. I'm talking about phenomenal, great parenting. In fact, I didn't live the usual life of an addict, at least so I thought. Again, I keep saying so I thought. All through high school and into college, I was a great athlete. I was the captain of my baseball team. Went on to, got a full scholarship to go to college, the D1 school to play baseball. I graduated with an opportunity to go play pro ball. Now, a couple of that, because I got the beauty and the brawn, right? And the brains, because I also was all academics. I graduated with honors in high school and from college with a degree in accounting. And when I graduated, I had opportunity, as I said, to go play pro ball, but I decided to go work for the government as an accountant. Now, government accountant is actually an oxymoron, if you know what I'm talking about. It shouldn't be in the same phrase, right? But that's what I did. I went to the government accountant, and I was working there, and I decided this isn't what I want to be. I had these grand dreams of how I wanted to create my life, what it wanted to look like. I wanted to be wealthy, successful. I wanted to be in the top four. I wanted to be on Forbes. That's what I wanted. So I left the government, and I started buying real estate. And I started getting more successful in real estate. I started partying even more. Because I'd gotten good at least I thought I'd gotten good at playing these two roles. One was the one I wanted you to see during the daytime. I was good. Matter of fact, when I was as high school and in college, I was the one that my friends' parents would say, "You need to be more like Dwight." Little did they know, I was the one influencing them to do all the other things at night. That didn't stop because I was still good at telling and spinning stories and talking myself out of situations. It wasn't that I didn't get caught a lot of times for the things that I was doing, but I knew how to talk my way out of it. And here I am with a little more money, a little more success, and my addiction is growing, and I got more money until about 9 years after I graduated from college. It's about 2011, and I'm sitting in front of a judge because I had failed probation once again, and I had to figure out how to get out of over 200 days of jail time. So I created this elaborate ruse, right? Me and my attorney put it together, right? The year before, I'd had a major accident where I had severed my spine, broken my hip, broken my lower leg, had road rash, all types of injuries, metal all through my body. So I'm like, I can't sleep on those hard cots and I can't be in that atmosphere. I might get injured. It's part of my case. We also brought in a drug and recovery specialist who was gonna vouch for me. He doesn't need to be going to jail. He needs to get recovery. Put on this whole elaborate ruse, and it worked. Instead of getting that 200 days of jail, the judge gave me 45. But before he gave me that 45-day sentence, he said to me, and for some reason the courtroom got quiet when he said it, and he was staring right at me, which is really freaking me out at the time. He says, you are too smart for your own good. Shoot, I got a 45-day sentence out of 200. I took that as a compliment. It worked. But here's the problem. Because I thought I was too smart for my own good, I wasn't really ever dealing with the problem. So 2 years later, in 2013, I get in trouble three times for the same crime on three different occasions, all felony convictions. You remember where I started? You would think with that upbringing that I should have I was on the track record for success, CEO or something. Matter of fact, one of my dope dealing friends told me, "I thought you would be a CEO by now." Then he still sold me what he had it. So three felony convictions means three strikes rule. I should have got the full brunt of what the court could have sentenced me to. But for some reason, God saw fit for me to give me another opportunity. So again, we went through this whole thing with the court system and got me into a reentry program that was going to allow me to get in some recovery, and then it was going to dismiss all three of those charges. But the problem was they had a waiting list. So I had to sit in jail until my number got called. I'm in there for a couple months, go in front of the court, in front of the judge, go back, continue the case. 2 more months, go back, continue the case. 2 more months, go back, continue the case. This whole time, I'm trying to create a case for me to get out of here. So come about the 7th month, I'm about to go to court again. I'm like, today's the day. Today is the day. So I have this green folder. And in the green folder, I have on one side of it, I have all the programs I've been into, the recovery stuff, the men's ministry, the parenting classes I've been in. On the left side, I have all these letters and things that I've been working on, my psychology and on my emotions and so forth, that I'm writing and talking about the Bible study that I was leading while I was in jail. Like, I had this whole case put together to present to the judge. This is going to be the day. It's perfect. I'm ready. And on just for good measure, I'd written on the inside Psalms 23. I'd written out all Psalms 23. I kept reciting it over and over and over, just a mantra I was putting into my brain. I woke up that next morning excited to go to court. I was excited to go to court. The only people excited to go to court are people who are in jail. So I get to court, and I'm in the holding cell waiting to go to get my turn in front of the judge. So in front of the judge. And people are coming in, they're excited because they're getting shorter sentences and they're getting released. And if you know anything about being in front of a judge, another thing is you want the judge to be in a good mood if you're going to be in front of the judge. So today, obviously, is going to be a great day. I said my Psalms 23, I said it again, and then I walk into the courtroom. That's a lie. I had shackles on, I shuffled into the courtroom. But I shuffled in there happy with this green folder. I lay it down in front of me with a smile on my face. I'm looking at the judge like, yes, just go do what you got to do. He says, starts running off the numbers from my court case, and I kept saying the numbers and saying the numbers and saying the numbers and saying the numbers. I had a lot of cases going on at one time. When he finished, he asked the prosecution, are you ready to proceed? They says, no, Your Honor, we must continue it again. I didn't even get a chance to present this case that I put together. They take me back to my dorm room, and as I'm walking in, I'm visibly upset, and the people I do Bible study come up to me because they're expecting me to have good news about being released. And I tell them, no, I'm not being released. I'm mad at God right now. Don't talk to me. So I go to my prayer closet. I had this basically little window that's cut out in there. I have my Bible open there, and I said, God, you and I need to talk, man. I'm mad at you. We need to talk. You need to tell me what's going on. Why am I still here? And I present my case to him the way I was going to present it to the judge. Look at all the stuff that I have done. Why am I still here? I got quiet and I waited because I needed an answer. I wanted an answer. What I heard was, you weren't ready. And for some reason, I was willing to accept it that day. I turned from the window, grabbed my Bible, my journal, and started preparing the day's Bible study because I had to actually teach them or talk to them about why it was okay to be mad at God sometimes. But a couple months later from that, I was released from jail. I got into that reentry program, successfully completed it, and I've been clean ever since. Now, I say all this because the thing about me and addiction is that I thought I was smart enough to outthink the judges. Do y'all think the legal system? Do y'all think my addiction? But addiction doesn't care about your pedigree. It doesn't care where your background, how smart or dumb you are, how big or small, how tall or fit or whatever. It does not care. It comes to steal, kill, and destroy. I had to find something greater than everything that I gave. Because what I know is that I have to give my best and let God handle the rest. That's the only way that I actually became clean. I do my best and I give God the rest. You see, I stand before you a grateful recovering addict. A grateful recovering addict. Because that Psalm 23, Yea, do I walk through the valley of the shadows of death? I shall fear no evil because God is on my side. It's true in my life. With that, I hope this has been helpful to someone.
This story was produced by Matt Pelser. You can find the full series at sideeffectspublicmedia.org. Monday night at 9, tune in to WFYI for an hour-long special on these stories.